It's time!
Happy New Month, Buffalo! The eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you're trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, alongside Chris Carino, Zach Cordova, Owen Kelty on the sticks. Guys, it is UFC 298 fight week. I'm pretty hyped. I cannot wait to get into it with you guys. We got Alexander Volkanovski defending his belt against Ilya Topuria. Should be a really, really fun night. Also got Robert Whittaker fighting, Ian Garry, Merab Dvalishvili, a ton of big fighters. Also, we're going to talk about a little bit later on. Apparently, there's an announcement that UFC 300, the main event, will be announced after this pay-per-view. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But before that, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I mean, I'm excited. After Super Bowl week, this is kind of like our Super Bowl. This is kind of like, I feel like, the first big card of the year where we look at it and it's actually kind of stacked. I mean, the first pay-per-view didn't really deliver, so I'm excited. I'm really excited for this episode in particular.
Yeah, Andrew, there's a thing in WWE. I know you two are massive fans. It's called the Road to WrestleMania. It starts at the Royal Rumble, heads into around the Elimination Chamber, then goes into April. It's around 4 months or so. Feels like the road to 300 right now. Mm-hmm. Feels like this is where the hype and the excitement of everything that's going to entail with 300 as we get later into this year. Feels like it all starts right now, and it just feels like it's the kickoff to maybe one of the more productive years in the history of the UFC, 2024.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think with all the events that they have announced, especially one that's going on this Saturday, I mean, I imagine it will, you know, the sky's the limit for the UFC in 2024. But with that being said, though, I do want to kind of get into a couple of these main card fights. The first one being my boy, Merab Dvalishvili. He is going to be taking on Henry Cejudo in a top-ranking bantamweight bout. Whoever wins this fight will probably get the title shot next, barring any weird Sean O'Malley nonsense, which very well could happen. I see you smiling over there, Zach. But despite that, though, I mean, it's going to be a very grappling-heavy bout. Obviously, Henry Cejudo, nicknamed Triple C, for his Olympic medal alongside his two belts, Merab Dvalishvili, also a fantastic wrestler. So what do you guys see in this fight? Who do you think has the edge? And, you know, who do you think will come away with the win?
Well, this is the fight on the card. I think I see the plus money and just like Vegas in general being able to take advantage of this card. Cejudo's at like a plus 180 or something right now. I just feel like that's where the most value is on the entire card, is maybe his money line. Strictly just because of what he's done, where he's been. The Triple C thing, I think, is, you know, obviously a big deterrent in the kind of psyche and the thinking of it, but I'm not necessarily super confident in Cejudo, but I think if we were just talking best value and maybe the best value when it comes to the underdog, I think that this is that kind of fight for sure.
Listen, he's been the Triple C, but I don't know if he is the Triple C anymore. I don't know if he's that bar. Same fighter. He's 37 years old now. I mean, he didn't really look the same against Aljo. He's still there, and he's still competitive. He can definitely hold his own against the top guys in this division. But when you're fighting against Merab, who literally does not care who you are and will try to take you down 200 times if he has to, he'll do it.
I mean, 40-plus takedown attempts. It's crazy.
Exactly. Against Peter Yan, I mean, who I feel is, as much as I love Sean O'Malley, I feel is kind of like the lineal champion right now after that close fight with Sean. I mean, to beat Peter Yan in the way he did after 1,000 takedown attempts and maybe only landing 10 of them, I mean, the guy is, there's a reason why he's nicknamed the machine. He does not stop, and I just think he's just kind of meant to break Cejudo.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, this is, you know, there's some big context heading into this fight, or big stakes heading into this fight. Henry Cejudo, I believe, said that he would retire if he didn't win this fight, which is obviously really big news. But at least for myself, I am leaning more towards Merab. I agree with you, Zach. I don't know if Henry Cejudo's last performance against Aljo was, you know, really the most impressive thing of all time. That being said, Aljamain was the champion at the time, a really, really great fighter. But Merab Dvalishvili, like you said, he's like an energizer bunny. He literally does not stop. 50-plus takedown attempts, I believe, in that fight with Petr Yan. And he's just a really, really dangerous guy that will keep pushing the pace. The one thing that I find interesting, though, is that this is only a 3-round fight instead of a 5-round fight, which would definitely, I feel like, give the edge to Merab. But with it only being 3 rounds, I could see Henry Cejudo maybe stealing a couple of those early rounds and possibly getting the win here. But I don't know. I just see every way that this kind of turns out is probably going to be Merab, because I don't know. I just agree. I think Henry's starting to get a little bit over the hump. How old is he now? Let me.
He's 37.
Yeah, 37. Yeah. Wow. So,
and just to add on to that, I mean, I think this is a fight where Henry's not really going to be able to get going. I just feel like he's a fighter who likes to set things up. He's incredibly technical. I mean, you see the content he puts out on social media and stuff. I mean, the guy knows the fight game unlike anybody else. His fight IQ is crazy. But at the same time, I think this is a fight where he's going to be reacting the entire time, because Merab is, his forward pace is literally unlike anybody else. And I also think he's the hungriest man maybe in the UFC. I mean, you can make him the highest paid fighter in the UFC and he'll still be incredibly hungry. I don't think there's no give in his game, and he's just going to keep going through Cejudo until he breaks him. He's going to frustrate him, and I just don't think Cejudo's able to get going in this one.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, I will say the one worrying thing also for me is that, at least looking throughout Cejudo's career and one of his biggest losses, which was to Demetrius Johnson in their first fight, Demetrius Johnson really put the pressure on him in that first fight, hit him with knees, kept pushing forward with that clinch, and that's, I feel like, a very similar style to Merab. I think DJ hits a little bit harder than Merab. But with that being said, though, Henry Cejudo was finished in the first round of that fight, so I think, again, that's another edge to Merab, where maybe if he pushes the pressure really, really hard and doesn't allow Henry to set up, like you're saying, set up his, you know, kind of karate-style striking a little bit, set up those takedowns. Yeah, I don't know. Either way, I think this goes to Merab. Maybe you...
Yeah, I just think Cejudo is the kind of guy where his back is against the wall. You said, you know, he's going to retire if he loses. Just seems like a guy that is really, really good with the kind of desperateness to his game. I do think, you know, talent-wise, naturally, you might be mismatched here just a little bit. But if we're looking at the betting odds that I just talked about earlier, and then also just looking at the character of a guy like Triple C, I just don't think he'll... I just think he has more to do in the division more than anything else, and I just think he's not going to let his run end here. And he'll be in this picture just a little bit. I just don't think this is where it ends. Just kind of, you know, plainly.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, I mean, we'll see which way it turns out. I definitely agree with you. I don't think Henry Cejudo is the type of person just kind of, you know, pack it up and go home on a, you know, fight that's fourth in a main card. Not the biggest, you know, spot ever. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a very interesting stylistic matchup. And whoever comes out of this probably most definitely will be fighting Sean O'Malley. So, yeah, we'll just see how it pans out. I'm guessing you're going for Henry Cejudo. Chris, got you. Zach, you're going for Merab?
It's got to be Merab.
I'm going for Merab as well. We'll see what happens. But moving on in this main card, we got another very, very fun fight. A lot of trash talk between these two fighters. It is Ian Garry versus Jeff Neal. Ian Garry, 13-0, undefeated in the UFC and overall throughout his combat career. He's taken on Jeff Neal, who I believe most recently lost to Shavkat Rakhmonov. That was a fantastic fight, though. Jeff Neal looked really, really great in that fight against a really tough test in Rakhmonov. And now he's taking on Ian Garry. And like I said before, there's been a ton of trash talk from Ian Garry wearing shirts of Jeff Neal's DUI arrest. Like his photo, his mugshot, he's wearing that on a shirt. And then fans kind of started to fight back a little bit. It's been a whole war online on Twitter.
There's definitely ammunition against Garry.
There's a lot. Yeah, I don't know if we kind of want to open up that whole Pandora's box, but Despite that, though, what do you guys see in this fight? What makes you excited? Do you think some of that trash talk is going to heat things up in the octagon when the doors close? Or
yeah, I think the Gary train continues. I think it will be maybe his biggest challenge so far. Gary hasn't really seen a ton of real challenges yet in the UFC. I think this is kind of the opponent that is easily at the highest of talent and the highest of level for him so far. I did see him in the press conference talk about maybe trying to retire Colby Covington after this fight. I thought that could be really interesting. I don't know if Gary and Covington could headline a card, but I think it could definitely co-headline or be around the top. There's just so much juice there. And you know, Covington would just you saw what he said to Leon. I can't even imagine what he would say to Ian Gary. So I think just on that, just the prospect of that idea, I think I'm going to pick Gary here just because I want to see him versus Covington just so bad.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to that extent, though, I don't know if Ian Gary could hold up to the, you know, trash talk of somebody like Colby Covington.
I think that would be kind of the test for him, and to see if he can become kind of a face of the UFC guy that they're kind of, you know, building him up to be.
Yeah, no, they're definitely hyping him up. I mean, the similarities to Conor McGregor, I mean, are right there. Zach, what do you see in this fight?
I mean, I agree with that, but I also just in recent times, the tide has totally shifted in the MMA like world. People do not like Ian Gary anymore. And it's always kind of been on the fence like that because people think he's trying to be Conor McGregor just a little
bit
too
much. Which I
agree
with. I think it's a little much.
Definitely. But, I mean, just going back, we got to talk about his fight, too, and not just whether he's liked or not. And I'm going to agree with you. I think that this is definitely one of his tougher tests, but I think he's able to get it done. I don't know if it's going to be super, super close. I know Jeff Neal is a guy who has pretty decent power, but I feel like he's more of a boxer and he's more of a headhunter kind of guy, and I don't think that he mixes it up like nearly as much as he should, and I think that's going to really kind of give him a lot of problems in this fight, especially with Ian Gary, who's kind of a really good range fighter. He's able to pick you apart from range. However, I think if he wants to win this, I think he's got to try to back Gary up against the cage and just try to get into a phone booth and get into a brawl and try to land something big. But I don't think Aaron Gary does that. However, I do think Gary has kind of like a suspect chin. He's been rocked a couple times, but
by like not hard shots too. Seemingly hard shots, which is
gives
very
you some
weird.
Doubts. Just enough to give you some doubts about his chin, maybe.
Just enough just for me to say I don't know if this is as easy as people think it would be for like an undefeated Ian Gary coming into this. It does worry me that if he gets hit with the big shot, how is he going to react to it?
Also, his name's not changed on ESPN. Still Ian Gary.
Yeah, it's Machado Gary now. Machado.
That's his name.
Yeah, it's weird. But
why is that, Andrew? Who's Machado?
I believe that's his. You know, I don't know. Are we getting into this? I don't know if we should.
I'm asking questions over here. I'm not.
I think you know the answer to that question.
I don't. No comment.
I think
no
you're trying to give me to say something.
No comment.
But anyway, though, back to your point, though, I will say that Ian Gary's suspect chin against Jeff Neal, who's literally nicknamed Hands of Steel. I mean, that's not a great combo. Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you 100%. I think the way that Jeff Neal wins this fight is that he pressures Ian Gary to the cage, or Ian Gary gets a little too overzealous while he's pressuring Jeff Neal to the cage. Either way, it kind of creates a phone booth type style fight. And then from there, I think that Jeff Neal can land a couple big punches, kind of compromise that chin, and hopefully steal a round or two, if not even possibly get a finish. But I do also agree with what you're saying, though, Zach, that Jeff Neal really isn't the most elaborate of strikers. He kind of falls in love with headhunting a whole lot, and I think that Ian Gary, if he really stays composed throughout the majority of this fight, he'll be able to avoid the majority of those attacks. But yeah, I mean, I think that the trash talk is very interesting in context with this fight because that, I don't know, in Ian Gary's last fight against, against Neil Magny, there was also a ton of trash talk, too, between their children, everything like that. But that led to that tangibly, you know, affecting the fight where Ian Gary really pushed the pace, tried to finish Neil Magny, also kind of gassed out a little bit.
Which he dominated that fight.
Yeah, he dominated that fight. I think
in Boston, I believe, right?
I think the point I'm trying to get at, though, is that Ian Gary wanted to finish that fight so bad, and his head was caught up so much in it.
Like
Sean
Strickland trying to knock out a streamer, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But he put himself in a bad position. where Neil Magny, if he was a better, more dangerous fighter, I think that could have been bad for Ian Garry, and I think that's exactly what could happen in this fight against Jeff Neal.
It sounds like you're almost describing Sneeko versus Sean Strickland to a T. And yeah, just on final prediction, I do think the level of danger is the highest it's been in his career for Ian Garry here. I do think, you know, Jeff Neal, not a guy you just roll over, not a guy who you decide to match up against just to get another win under your belt. I think it's a statement kind of win and a statement kind of fight to take on for Ian Garry, to be honest with you. And I think the fight, the hype train continues here. I think there's highs and lows when it comes to the general public and how popular he is. I think he should really lean into it, just become the villain. I think that's, if you want to become love, that's the easiest thing to do, just become what they want. And yeah, I would just love to see the Covington fight parlay right into this. I think it'd be beautiful. And I do hate these Anaheim crowds. I do think Vegas is better. I think Anaheim crowds are a little more tampered, so maybe not the rabid reaction that we're going to expect for Ian Garry. But nonetheless, yeah, I just think a win here would set him up really well for just getting to the top of that division more than anything else.
Yeah, I do agree with you there, Chris. I think I'm leaning more towards Ian Garry in this. I think it will actually be a close fight, which I don't think Ian Garry wants at all. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like kind of like you brought up, though, I do think that Ian Garry's kind of urgency to prove a point and try to, especially after pulling out of the last fight that he was supposed to be in, after all of the trash talking.
Trials and tribulations.
After everything he took, I think this is one that he's really going to be trying to get a finish. And he could put himself in a dangerous spot. But I also think he, for the most part, could be a really smart fighter. I think he knows what he needs to do. I also look at Jeff Neal's record, and I see he lost to Wonderboy. And I feel like that is as close as a style as you can get to an Ian Garry in terms of comparing people, in terms of the range and the kind of kickboxing-esque kind of style. So that does make me concerned for Jeff Neal in terms of fighting a guy like Ian Garry. And I think that Ian Garry is able to just keep the range in this one and just pick him apart. I think just hammers him with body shots, especially the body kicks. I know Gary's been saying he wants to get a knockout by one of those, so I'm going to take Garry. I think it could go to Jeff Neal, though, if Garry puts himself in a bad situation trying to finish it and Jeff Neal just lands something big. But Ian Garry, I'm going to say knockout in this one.
Knockout, wow. I mean, that's a big prediction. I actually don't think he'll get the finish.
Me either.
Because Jeff Neal has, like, a head of steel also along with his hands, at least from what I've seen. But it should be a fun fight, and I'm interested to see how Ian Garry performs. Moving on, though, we've got our co-main event for this UFC 298 pay-per-view. That is Robert Whittaker taking on Paulo Costa. Guys, I got to ask you, I mean, is this fight even going to happen? Paulo Costa loves pulling out, like, literally hours, days before a fight is scheduled. I don't even know if he's actually in Anaheim at this point in time. Is he?
Okay, yeah, he was there for media day,
All right,
he
perfect.
Did the pictures, which, by the way, which is why I think it's going to happen. He looks completely, like, as lean as a human can possibly get, and I think that he's really doing everything he can to try to maintain that physique while trying to make 185, which a little bit worrisome, but I also think he's gonna go through with this fight. I don't think he pulled out of this one.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think the matchup is too cool. The two of them fighting each other, I think, to pull out of this one. And also, I think excitement in general on Paulo Costa would simmer dramatically if he pulled out of this fight as well. Like, this is really the point of no return where I think people would genuinely start to lose interest. So yeah, I don't see him pulling out. I think it's almost a necessity, not only for him to fight in this fight, but to win, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think that he needs to fight soon, or else it is kind of, you know, over for, like you said, you know, people that actually care about him. But looking at this fight, I mean, Robert Whittaker, most recently coming off a loss to Dricus du Plessis, the current middleweight champion, which is still weird to say out loud. I'm pretty sure I'll get used to it eventually. But either way, though, Robert Whittaker, I believe, gets knocked out by, like, a really short, like, jab or straight, really odd strike in that fight, but just kind of looked a step behind the entire time. So he's looking to bounce back. And Paulo Costa's last fight, if I remember correctly, was it the Luke Rockhold fight?
Luke Rockhold in
2022.
Wow. Yeah, in Utah.
That is insane. It's crazy because I feel
like it's even crazier. 2022 is 2 years ago. What is that about?
I mean, he's fought just three times now in the last 5 years. I mean, that's kind of
Yeah, it's been
kind of crazy.
Yeah,
Whitaker doesn't fight a ton either. To be devil's advocate here.
Yeah, he definitely fights more often than Paulo Costa. It's crazy though.
I fight more often than Paulo Costa.
Yeah, I mean at this point, it's crazy though because I swore that he fought like since the Luke Rockhold fight. But I'm just looking, it's canceled, 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 canceled. It's crazy how many fights he's had canceled. So, I mean, now that he's actually fighting, how do you think this fight plays out, guys?
I mean, to me, I just feel like Paulo Costa is such like a bully style of fighting where he's just going to push forward at you and just throw whatever he can at you. But at the same time, I've always thought this about Paulo Costa. I just don't feel like he's skilled. I don't feel like, and I don't mean it in like a bad way. I think his style is that he is just big and powerful and he's just going to walk you down. I don't think he has like that kind of slickness, kind of flair to his game where as a striker, whereas like a Robert Whittaker, like a Israel Adesanya, who are able to mix up and set up shots. I think Paulo Costa just, I'm going to walk you down and throw it at you. And if it hits you, it hits you. If it does, I'm going to keep throwing it and just take damage while I do it. So I also think he gasses out a lot, especially in that Luke Rockhold fight. I mean,
I will say big caveat for that entire fight night and pay-per-view. I believe they were in Salt Lake City, so like everyone was kind of gassing out. But that, I will say though, to your point, Paulo Costa is notable for just throwing everything out their first two rounds and then just gassing hard.
Exactly, so, yeah. And he made Luke Rockhold look incredible. And when Luke Rockhold was old, he was slow and he was just tired that whole fight, and he made Luke Rockhold look really good. I think Robert Whittaker, he looks probably the most motivated he's looked since he lost that first Izzy fight. And I definitely think that this is we're going to see kind of like a newer Robert Whittaker, as new as you can get at this point in his career. But I think that this is one that he just really wants after that Duplessis loss.
Yeah, you always love to see a matchup where it's just two genetic freaks walking into the octagon. It's awesome. I'm trying to think of other fights in the past that have been similar to that. None really come to my head, but it's just always nice to see two guys. It almost feels like a fantasy matchup of just two insane athletes. I do think Whittaker is now hitting that point now where the age discrepancy in fights may start to become a problem. It's not one here. They're only a year apart in age, so I do think that is in favor of Whittaker. And yeah, I just think it's going to be similar logic I have to the main event, but after losing to Duplessis, I just don't see him now dropping to Paulo Costa. It just seems like the most non-Robert Whittaker thing to ever do. I don't know. Robert Whittaker in my head is just like a superhero in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously the Izzy era kind of diminished that, but you look at like UFC 3, the video game, he's like the highest ranked fighter on that game.
Oh, he was like my main. He was the GOAT.
Robert Whittaker in every way is like a superhero, and I still feel that way. I still see him that way. Obviously, times have changed, and obviously, when talking about the middleweight division, I don't know if he'll really ever get the spotlight he deserves anymore with the circus that is that main event division in that division or the main event scene in that division, but I do think Whittaker picks up a win here. I think it's exciting, too. I don't think this fight goes to the bell, interestingly enough, and I just see Whittaker finally just either gassing him out, either Costa gasses him out, or either he gasses Costa out, or he just catches him with the right hand and it ends quickly. But either way, I think I see a Whittaker stoppage kind of ending this one.
Yeah, I mean, I've been flip-flopping back on this fight a little bit because Whittaker, I mean, he is one of my favorite fighters of all time. He is such a good stylistic fighter. And also, I mean, he's only 33, still such a young guy, despite having such a storied career in the UFC. But I will say it was very, very
character?
Yeah, very out of character, thank you, for him to lose to Cedricus Duplessis in that nature. I mean, for somebody that is as good of a fighter as he is to just kind of get finished, I believe, in the first round as quickly as that
second round.
It just was something that really took me by surprise and started to make me think, is he kind of in the twilight years of his career? Because, I mean, we've seen that with guys. They might not be the oldest guys in the UFC, but since they've been fighting for such a long time, kind of the tread in the tire starts to wear out a little bit. I don't think that's it for Robert Whittaker, and I think this is a really good comeback fight. It is a dangerous comeback fight for him, but I will say I think if anybody could take on a fight like this in Paulo Costa, it is Robert Whittaker, and that's because he has fought other physical freaks before. Most specifically, I'm thinking of Yoel Romero. He had those two crazy fights with him, and won both of them. Or actually, no, he drawed the first time and then won the second time, if I'm remembering correctly. But either way, though, I feel Paulo Costa and Yoel Romero are pretty similar fighters, if not Yoel Romero is a bit more skilled in certain aspects.
Michael Bisping, I love you, Michael. I love you.
I love you.
I love you, Michael.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
I love you all.
But, I mean, also, to I guess, to my point, too, Costa and Romero ended up fighting as well, one of Costa's very few fights in the past couple of years. And Costa ended up, I believe, winning that fight by a very narrow margin. So I don't know. I just think that this is Robert Whittaker's fight. I think stylistically it matches up well for him. I don't think it'll be an easy fight by any nature, but I can see him putting the pressure on Costa, kind of gassing him out, or even weathering a storm, kind of rope-a-dope type thing. Either way, though, I think this kind of goes to Whittaker, and I'm guessing both of you guys kind of agree with me in that. Gotcha.
Definitely. I think it's hard to pick against him in this one. I mean, Whittaker's just, he's so skilled, and I think, I mean, just being the gatekeeper for this division for so long, he's kind of like that. He's kind of like that gold tier, like top of the line. It's Izzy. For the longest time, now we have Duplessis as champion. But it was, the gold standard was Izzy, and then it was Whittaker and everybody else.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way. I don't think that I'm going to look at that Duplessis loss and say that he's not Robert Whittaker anymore, because I still think that he's going to show up this weekend. He's going to kind of remind everybody who he is.
Yeah,
I agree.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I was always, I'm still a big fan of a really great MMA analyst out there, Jack Slack. He always said in the middleweight division, you got Robert Whittaker, Israel Adesanya, and then the rest of the division. Zach, you're pretty much quoting that. I completely agree with you. I don't think Paulo Costa can really break into that. We'll see. But yeah, I think this is either way a really big stakes fight for both fighters, and I do want to state that before we move on. Robert Whittaker, if he loses this fight, that's two losses in a row. Kind of have to reevaluate what you're doing with your career. And then also for Paulo Costa, if he doesn't win this fight, he's been out for over a year now, so he really needs a win to kind of stay relevant in this middleweight division. So either way, I think both these guys are going to be firing on all cylinders, really trying to get a finish.
By the way, just to be bold, I don't know if you guys have seen in every Robert Whittaker fight, but he throws a high kick combo that he seemed to land on just about everybody except for Izzy and Duplessis. And to me, I think I just want to be bold, and I'm going to say he catches Costa with that, because Luke Rockhold had so much success with the kicks against him. I think Whittaker finds that combo and he lands that head kick and he really hurts Costa in this one.
That's a very specific prediction.
Very specific, but it's something from watching Whittaker's fights and watching Costa's last fight that I just feel stuck out to me is this is how he gets it done. This is kind of like the thing that is going to break through. And to me, I think that, I don't know, I just think that's what it's, just to be bold for this one. I mean, if I was a betting man, you may want to throw a little bit of money on that, but
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that Whittaker 1-2 head kick, that is like trademarked his move. So who knows? Maybe we'll see it. I mean, pretty much every single time he wins, he pulls it out. So who knows? But moving on, I do want to talk about this main event. We do got to get going soon. So let's get right into it. Alexander Volkanovsky defending his featherweight belt against Ilia Topuria. Ilia Topuria, the crazy kickboxer, more of a boxer from Georgia, 14-0, undefeated in the UFC. This is probably Volkanovski's toughest test, I would say, in the featherweight division.
Especially in the division, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people would want to say Max Holloway. I mean, I definitely would because I'm a huge fan of him, but I'm enough of a realist to kind of recognize that that was not his biggest fight. This is by far, I think, his biggest test in the featherweight division. So, guys, what do you see in this fight? What makes you excited? Who do you think is going to win?
I'm going to give the floor to Cordova over there.
No, this has been a hard one for me to look at all week. I mean, just for the past couple months, because I am a big Alexander Volkanovsky fan. But Ilia Topuria is just, he's next level. And every time I watch him fight, the guy is, just puts out masterclasses.
Are you about a...
Don't make me say it. I don't want to say it, man. But I mean, there's a reason. There's a reason that Ilia Topuria's nickname is El Matador. He fights just like that.
I can't believe this.
He fights just like that. And I was watching him fight Josh Emmett. And keep in mind, I'm not going to compare Josh Emmett to Volkanovski in any way, because Josh Emmett kind of stands there like a punching bag in some sort. Where Volkanovski, he's not going to stand. He's going to move around. He's going to be harder to hit. But Ilya Topuria is just so slick. He's so patient, and he's just so powerful that on the feet, he's just so hard to beat. And I think if Volk plays into his game, which is boxing, I don't see him being able to beat Topuria, especially if it is a just straight stand-up fight, just straight boxing. Ilya Topuria kind of has that edge for me.
Very interesting.
See, I don't know. The thing that makes me nervous with this fight is that, I don't know, it's just that Volkanovski, if he doesn't want to rely on the striking, which I don't think he should rely on it, Ilya Topuria is probably one of the best boxers I've seen in UFC history. I think he's better than Max Holloway, better than Dustin Poirier. I think he's one of the best, if not the best, currently.
Better than Strickland.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. But Volkanovski, I think if he brings this fight to the ground, I don't even know if he has the edge there. Because, I mean, we saw Ilya Topuria versus Bryce Mitchell. I mean, Bryce Mitchell, again, not the most fantastic grappler out there, but, I mean, still landed a couple twisters, still very respected. Topuria ragdolled him, like, actually ragdolled him, like, manhandled him, threw him around, ended up submitting him. So I don't know if Volkanovski has the clear definitive edge if he takes this fight to the ground.
Did Topuria go five rounds with a Dagestani, though?
Yeah, I mean, that's 100%, I will say, very true. But also, I mean, he isn't coming off of a head kick loss either. Yeah. So it cuts both ways. I don't know. One interesting thing I did want to bring up with Topuria is that he is so boxing heavy. I think he is yet to throw a body kick or a head kick in the UFC, which is crazy considering I think he has like maybe, what, six fights, seven fights in it, to never throw a strike like that. Wild. But Chris, what do you see in this fight? Are you thinking more Volk, more Topuria? It seemed like you were kind of taken aback when Zach went for Topuria, so I'm guessing you're a Volk guy.
He's just a Volky super fan over there, so I just kind of assumed that he'd be backing his boy. I guess we don't back our boys around here.
That's not what I'm saying.
Let me finish. The zeros on Ilya's record, they're very loud. They speak very, very loud. He's a very impressive fighter. I don't think there's any going around denying that. I also don't think there's any reason to deny that this is probably Volk's biggest test in the division. My logic, and this is simple logic, he doesn't drop two fights in a row. He doesn't drop two fights in a row. Especially in his division, he's the king of the division. Obviously, may have gotten a little overzealous with his last fight, as he usually does. But I just don't see him in his division dropping the first fight back and then now having no silverware. It just doesn't seem very Volkanovski-like to me. I mean, obviously, that's kind of dumb logic. But also, when you're kind of thinking about where he is in his career, the era he's in his career, how many more major main events is he going to have walking in as the favorite with the belt? It doesn't seem like there's going to be a ton more of those. I think he'll take advantage of the opportunity he's in, hopefully have a little self-awareness, and just get one more great title defense on a great card of a great show, just to kind of, you know, just show his dominance one more time. And then I think maybe we can start to feel a bit of a downslide after this. But I just can't see him underperforming in this one. Yeah. Just I can't.
And that's the thing about Volk is he makes great fires. He made a future Hall of Famer in Max Holloway look incredibly average.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I've become such a fan of him is I feel like we've had these instances where we've said, okay, this is it where Volk finally gets caught. This is his dangerous fight. I don't know if he can get through this test. And he proves everybody wrong every time, even in the first Islam fight. Nobody picked him in that. And yet, even though he lost, which I still thought he won, he was more competitive than anyone could have ever imagined against Islam. And he's definitely been Islam's hardest fight up to this point in his career. And that's what makes it so hard for me to pick against him in this fight, and that's why I don't even think I could give a straight prediction for this fight. For me, it's just kind of like, if this goes five
he's
rounds
going independent
if this goes five rounds, this is Volk's fight to win, especially a decision. The pace, the cardio, just being in Ilya's face, I feel like is going to be a lot for him.
Also, there's no way Ilya wins a decision.
Definitely not. I'd be shocked if
just
Ilya
either
won
way
a decision.
Just no way.
Yeah. But I think
he has the gas tank for it, though. I don't think anything.
Just the judge's thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I guess. Yeah. True.
Little bit of craziness, too. I mean, this almost feels like deja vu. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys have really paid attention to it, but this is very, very similar to Conor McGregor's kind of come-up story. I mean, both 27 years old at their first title shot, both undefeated going into their title shot, and both fighting kind of like aging champions who have just reigned for so long. It just almost feels like another version of that hyped, undefeated prospect coming in to beat the unbeatable champion, and that's what kind of scares me about it, is it kind of feels like deja vu.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the similarities there are definitely palpable, and it is worrying if you are a Volkanovski fan, but yeah, I don't know. I keep kind of flip-flopping back and forth. I think that, honestly, the longer I think about it, I think Volkanovski has the slight edge. I think that will, I mean, I don't know. It's just such a hard decision to make, because honestly, I feel that Ilya Topuria, for how good he is, I think that there's a couple takeaways from him. I think that he's incredibly arrogant, and I think that off the back of that,
he's wearing his belt.
He's already wearing the belt. Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
This fight dictates who has to take champion out of their bio on Instagram too.
Yeah, I know exactly. He already has that there, but I think that him wearing the belt, him doing that, I think that also lends itself into the octagon too, where, you know, when you're fighting a Bryce Mitchell, that works out because you're so much better than him. Bryce Mitchell's not a fantastic fighter, but against Volkanovski, I don't know if he could be right. That cocky and that cocksure of your abilities in there, because you might make a fatal mistake. I mean, Volkanovski is still one of the most measured kickboxers that I've seen in the UFC. I mean, he's still a fantastic champion. So I think Topuria might be thinking it's a little bit easier of a win than
it might
be. And if he
does that, it's over.
I know, yeah. That's what I'm worried about, at least for him, but I don't know. I mean, also to that same extent, though, Zach, I mean, when McGregor was coming up against in that Aldo fight, you know, he said it was going to be the easiest fight of his life, and then it turned out to literally be the easiest fight
maybe
of his life.
Maybe the only instance of that ever paying off.
Yeah.
I could say there's been a couple of those.
Maybe the second Jones fight against Cormier, he was just like, I'm going to murder you. And was just like, he's like, I'm going to beat you, and you can't do anything about it. Like, I'm going to beat you. Like, that is some of the most effective trash talk ever. But yeah, I don't know. Ilya just give me Volk. Just give me Volk decision. That's kind of how I'm feeling.
I will say
if
it goes the distance, I think Volk wins it. I think if it's inside three rounds, I think that Topuria probably has it. Anything, I think, longer, I think Volkanovski definitely has the advantage.
By the way, I need to just expand on that John Jones for a second as well. He also has a line in that trash talk where he says, every moment that you prepare for this fight is a waste of your life.
Yeah,
that is some like...
Woo! So many good lines.
Chill
yeah.
out, John. But go on. Yeah, I had to add to that.
I mean, even Ilya, have you seen that he's making a movie about this called Road to the Title that's supposed to release not too long after this fight? I mean,
unfortunately.
Yeah, imagine if he loses. That would be so embarrassing.
Does
like,
it not release anymore?
You have to go to the premiere of your own film. I imagine
almost
it still comes out.
Almost
the champion.
Almost the champion.
Contending for to be a champion.
Well, final predictions. I'm going for Volkanovski. Chris, Volk. Zach, Topuria. It's weird that you're the one going for Topuria.
I'm going to say, man, if it ends in a finish, I'm going to say Topuria gets a knockout. I don't know if Volk's able to put him away. Mm-hmm. But I do say if it goes five rounds, I think it's Volk. Volk just can't play into his boxing game. He can't do that, and he can't let Ilya be the matador like he is. I mean, it's literally what he did to Josh Emmett, invited the offense, made Emmett miss big, and then just caught him with the counters. And I think Volk's too smart for that, and especially if it goes five rounds. That's what I'm going to say, Volk five rounds. And but if Ilya catches him, Ilya will knock out.
Wouldn't it be interesting Ilya wins back-to-back huge cards, that it's a huge upset or just a
big
surprise in the main event? I think it would parlay beautifully into the 300 announcement as well, because you know Dana said he's going to be doing that after the fights, obviously not before the fights to overshadow the event, but that level of excitement going right into 300, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And very, very quick, do you guys have any predictions on what that main event announcement could possibly be? I mean, it could literally just be one part of the main event. Like, do you think Adesanya could be part of it?
Five championship rounds. Ariel Helwani, Dana White, I think that's what
Book
they're preparing.
I
think that's what they're preparing for. Mm-hmm. I take Ariel 100%.
Oh yeah.
Just on a level of just a rat, and just who'd probably crawl.
Give me Helwani all day.
Probably crawl up and down him. But yeah, no. In seriousness, the Conor thing is so weird. Like, it's so weird. And I was seriously complaining about this with my roommates the other day, because I saw Dana say the fall now. are we just going to keep, how many seasons are you going to say we're going to push this back until it's a real thing? Conor needs to really, he needs to be careful before he falls to the, take it from the WWE, the island of relevancy, as Roman Reigns would call it, the island of relevancy. I think he's slowly dissipating from that. I think people are caring less and less, similarly to how we talked about Paulo Costa earlier. I feel that way about Conor, so I think for his sake, it should be him. Bilal Muhammad versus Leon would be hilarious, just to make every MMA fan cry everywhere. I know Brock Lesnar's having some legal trouble right now, but that would also be awesome. Yeah. If they just announced, they were like, yeah, John Jones, Brock Lesnar main event. That would be... that would be awesome. And there's no Ariel around anymore to spoil it, so possibly that could be true. But
That is true. Yeah, we won't get a spoiler this time out.
Yeah, and Dana said it's going to be a huge surprise, so that makes me lean away from the Izzy Duplessis. But I think just for wanting to sound correct sake and just a bold prediction, I think it's Izzy Duplessis, and I just think he's trying to throw us all off the beaten path, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think Dana is overhyping a little bit. I'm kind of agreeing with you there, Zach. Any left field prediction? You kind of agree with us?
Left field, I'm going to say just out of... I mean, it's been talked about a little bit, and it kind of died down. Alex Pereira versus... why am I blanking on the name? Tom Aspinall.
That could be a fun fight.
Could be interesting. But then what does that say? What does that do to John? And also, is that a heavyweight or light heavyweight fight?
It would be a heavyweight. There's no way Aspinall is going to cut down the light heavyweight. True. But, I mean...
Pereira, double champ.
I think.
Can you imagine?
I mean, three weight classes that would be.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Has anyone ever done that, three weight classes?
No. Not in MMA. Not in the UFC, at least. In other promotions, who knows? But in UFC, that's never happened.
Woo! Pereira versus John, that's all I'm thinking about right now.
Out of everyone currently active in the UFC, I think Pereira is the most likely to do that, or has the most capability 100%. To actually do that.
He's got the body type to do it. I mean, he's just a massive human being in every weight class he's fought in. He's just been massive. So, but let's be real. If it does happen, Aspinall takes him down and dominates on the ground.
Great show. Yeah. Andrew?
Oh, my out of left field prediction? Ooh, I don't even know what I would bring up. Honestly, I was kind of going for McGregor. You kind of...
McGregor, CM Punk?
McGregor, CM Punk. Line that up. I mean, I know Ronda Rousey also was saying how she might want to come back to UFC.
Main event.
I don't know if that's main event worthy, though. I mean, like, who would she even fight?
Riot the UFC offices.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
They got to change it and have her fight Holly for the rematch.
That's what I was saying before we stepped
Shut up over there.
I was saying John Jones earlier.
Rocky and all that.
You can't tell me that wouldn't be fun, especially after the
you
first
fight.
You
can't
tell
me she's
not
New Mexico's
Rocky.
Come on now. All right, anyway, go on, Andrew, sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just saying maybe John Jones, but also, I mean, he tore his pectoral, so he's 100% out. I don't know. I'm very interested, genuinely, to see what this fight announcement is because Dana is saying it's something that will be surprising, take the fans off guard. And if I'm honestly, like, being completely honest, I don't think it will be that surprising, but who knows? I mean, he's hyped things up, and they've actually hit before. He's hyped things up, and they've kind of underwhelmed us before. So I don't know which one it's going to be.
As his life, Andrew. As his life.
As his life. So I guess we'll see what happens. I'm very, very excited for UFC 298, though. It should be a very, very fun night. But I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out UFC 298 on Saturday and our preview, or actually our breakdown of the fights next week. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my great co-host, Zach Cordova and Chris Carino, and a shout-out to our producer for this week, Owen Kelty. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.